and the Islamic resistance in Iraq targets an Israeli military site in the occupied Golan Heights in support of the Palestinian people in Gaza. Thank you for joining us. The death toll in Gaza continues to rise amid relentless Israeli bombing of the besieged strip. The northern Gaza city has been the focus of the latest airstrikes. At least 17 people have been killed in two attacks targeting the Shujaiya suburb. Amongst those killed were 10 policemen tasked with securing the delivery of aid to displaced people. Elsewhere in Gaza city, at least 20 Palestinians or Palestinian civilians, including women and children, were killed in attacks on a vehicle and a residential building near the Al-Shifa hospital. As a result of almost 6 months of U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, over 32,600 people have been killed and more than 75,000 injured. Our correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah to give us an update on the situation in the war-ravaged strip. He said Palestinian fighters are putting stiff resistance to Israeli forces on the ground despite the relentless airstrikes and shelling.
The Israeli occupation forces are still attacking the Al-Shifa medical complex and the surrounding areas with more airstrikes and attacks, inflicting more destruction and death in those areas. The Israeli warplanes intensified their attacks against the western parts of Gaza City, particularly Al-Shujaiya neighborhood. Whereas over the last couple of hours, the Israeli warplanes targeted Al-Shujaiya club, claiming the lives of at least 17 Palestinian civilians, including police members and officers. They were responsible for securing and organizing the delivery of the humanitarian aid to the people in Gaza City. At least 40 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over the continuous and the incessant Israeli attacks and the relentless Israeli strikes and the artillery shelling that was intensified against Al-Zaytun neighborhood over the last couple of hours. On the other hand, the Palestinian resistance announced that they have targeted several Israeli tanks in the surrounding areas of the Al-Shifa medical complex. We are talking about roughly 6 consecutive months, and the Palestinian resistance is still able to fight back the eastern part of Al-Burj refugee camp. Fierce clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces when the Israeli occupation forces attempted to move forward in the eastern part of Al-Burj refugee camp. 21 out of 24 residential towers were flattened by the Israeli continuous airstrikes against Al-Amal town, which is located in the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp.
The U.S. has in recent days quietly authorized the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to Israel. U.S. officials say the new arms packages include more than 1,800 bombs. These are 2,000-pound devices that can demolish entire city blocks and are almost never used in populated areas. Israel, however, has used them extensively in Gaza. Last week, the State Department also authorized the transfer of 25 F-35 fighter jets and engines to Israel. Earlier reports said the U.S. had quietly made more than 100 weapon sales to Israel since the onslaught on Gaza began on October the 7th. The arms supplies go against the U.S. call for a ceasefire in Gaza. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it has targeted a military site in Syria's occupied Golan Heights in retaliation for Israel's ongoing air and artillery strikes on Gaza. The resistance group says the drone attack was in response to the massacres committed by Israel against Palestinian civilians, including women, children, and the elderly. In recent months, the Islamic resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli positions. It has also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Tens of thousands of Yemenis have once again taken to the streets of the capital Sana'a and several other cities to reaffirm their full support for the oppressed Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Abdel Latif Awashali has more in this report.
On the third Friday of Ramadan, tens of thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of Sana'a and several other cities, renewing their unwavering support for Palestinians. Some held banners that read, "We are entering the 10th year and the Palestinian cause remains our priority."
We're entering the 10th year of our resistance against an all-out war on the Yemeni people. We are here today to show our continued support for the Palestinians in Gaza and across the occupied territories. When the countries that possess enormous military capabilities failed to support the Palestinians in Gaza and even conspired with the Israeli regime against them, the war-stricken Yemenis came out to support their oppressed brothers. They left the world in awe with a united front and a soaring popularity in the region.
Protesters chanted slogans vowing to retaliate against the US and the UK airstrikes on the Yemeni cities. They also pledged to escalate their naval operations as long as the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians and the aggression against Yemen continue. Yemenis also slammed the United Nations Security Council for its failure to put an end to the Israeli atrocities in Palestine, despite its recent ceasefire resolution.
We consider the Security Council complicit in the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. The United States manipulates the Security Council and the United Nations based on its interests. That is why the U.S. used its veto power three times to prevent a ceasefire in Gaza. But besides that, the Security Council resolutions are ineffective in ending the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in Gaza.
The problem is not with the Security Council or the United Nations, but with the United States, which has the power to control and manipulate these international organizations. There are many binding decisions that have not been implemented because Washington uses its power against the weak and oppressed people of the world. It is necessary to find an effective mechanism for the Security Council because there are many countries that are yearning to be liberated from the Western hegemony. The events that the world is witnessing in some African countries are a clear proof for this desire for change.
On Thursday, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, criticized the US and the UK for exploiting the humanitarian situation in Yemen. He slammed them for threatening to cut the UN-provided aid to Yemenis in order to stop the country's naval operations. Al-Houthi asserted that, according to the US officers, the American Navy has not faced such a humiliation in the international waters since the 19th century.
Neither the military aggression against Yemen nor the cessation of the supply for humanitarian aid has succeeded in halting Yemen's naval operations. Furthermore, officials state that the ongoing Western aggression only serves to motivate the Yemeni army to continue enhancing its capabilities. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
The UNRWA chief has reacted to a ruling by the International Court of Justice on the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Felipe Lazzarini says the court's order for Israel to allow aid into Gaza without delay reminds us that the catastrophic situation there is man-made. We discussed the issue in our news review program. Let's take a listen to what our guests had to say.
On this segment of the program, the head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says the latest verdict by the International Court of Justice indicates that the catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza is man-made. Philip Lazzarini made the remarks on his social media post, saying the condition in Gaza can still be reversed as the ICJ order calls on Israel to cooperate with the UN to facilitate aid deliveries. He emphasized that Israel needs to quash its earlier decision regarding UNRWA and allow the agency to get its aid convoys into Gaza. Lazzarini also urged governments to exert pressure on Israel to comply with the ruling and help avert a looming famine in Gaza. On Thursday, judges at the top UN court unanimously asked Israel to allow the immediate delivery of humanitarian supplies into the besieged territory. In the order, the judges said the Palestinians face worsening conditions of life and that famine and starvation are spreading. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajadeh, who's joining us on the line. From the British capital, London, we also have columnist and political analyst Saeed Shahabi, who's also joining us from the British capital as well. Let's start off with Mr. Shahabi in London. I want to get your perspective on this recent order by the ICJ, what it means, and also the outcome of it, which most likely will continue to be ignored by the Israelis.
Thank you very much. In this holy month, the people of Gaza are being denied the basic needs of life, food and medicine, and even water. And the reports from the international agencies say that there are cases of death, of hunger, famine, like beginning of famine in Gaza. And this is man-made. This is then made by the Israelis by preventing food and medicine from entering into Gaza and by blockading that area. Israel cannot function without the support of the Americans. So unless there is a lot of pressure from America, a lot of pressure from the Arab countries themselves, which are ignoring the plight of the Palestinians, unless there is there are these pressures, the Israelis are likely to ignore the ICJ's order to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza.
Masoud Shajara, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, is joining us on the line from London. Mr. Shajara, I want to get your perspective on this recent ICJ order as well. And do you agree with Mr. Shahabi? It is at the hands of the international community to start and exert pressure on the Israelis, but with unequivocal support of the United States, how will that happen? How can this status quo ever change?
Well, it's not just the blame shouldn't just go to the United States. I think the blame goes to whole of the international community and indeed the international institution. All the international institution, be it UN, be it the international court, or indeed be it OIC, they're all incompetent and unable to make any difference whatsoever. All the resolutions in the last few months, and indeed the statement by international court, have not saved one innocent Palestinian child's life. I mean, when are we going to realize that these institutions are nothing but colonial tools to implement the wishes of not the international community? Let us not forget right now, even in the West, between 70-85% of people demanding ceasefire immediately. But the so-called the leaders of these countries, this democracy, is deliberately ignoring the wishes of the majority and implementing and supporting the continuation of this war, not just by silence, but actually giving arms and equipment and making making facilities for the Zionist state to kill more effectively and commit war crimes more effectively.
Thank you, columnist and political analyst Saeed Shahabi, joining us from London, and chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajara, joining us on the line from the British capital as well.
Welcome back. The International Court of Justice on Thursday issued an order for Israel to take all the necessary and effective measures to ensure basic food supplies arrive in Gaza without delay. Let's listen to reactions of some of the Palestinians in the war-ravaged Strip on the latest ICJ ruling.
Humanitarian conditions are miserable. We want a solution. We need a solution. The aid that goes to northern Gaza does not reach the needy ones, while the aid that arrives in the southern Gaza is being sold in the markets in retail or wholesale.
قرار It was a courageous and good decision by the International Court of Justice, but will Israel abide by the ruling? Israel considers itself to be above the law. Humanitarian conditions in Gaza are not hidden. It is very miserable, prices are very high, and there is no monitoring of prices. Businessmen put the prices they wish, and they are not being controlled by the Ministry of Economy or any law.
The order came very late. The war has been ongoing for about 6 months, and now the International Court of Justice has found out that the people are on the verge of starvation. What we care about is implementing this order. But is there anyone to pressure Israel to implement it? I don't think so.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has made a visit to the Turkmen capital of Ashgabat in order to boost bilateral ties between the two countries. Farzana Ashurian has more in this report.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made a visit to the Turkmen capital of Ashgabat on Wednesday in order to boost bilateral ties between the two countries. Amir Abdollahian met with Turkmen President Sardar Gurbanguliyevich Berdimuhamedov. The Iranian top diplomat also met with his Turkmen counterpart Rashid Meredov. During the meeting, both sides expressed satisfaction with the progressing relations between the two countries.
The volume of our trade is boosting significantly, and with the agreements we signed today, we expect a jump in our trade. We will also increase our cooperation in the field of electricity and gas.
Pursuing the memorandum of understandings assigned by the both countries' presidents in 2022 was also one of the main goals of the visit.
One of the main goals of the visit was to pave the way for Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's visit to Turkmenistan in order to pursue the agreement signed between the two countries.
According to Iranian officials, the relationship between Iran and Turkmenistan is not just a neighborly relationship, but a relationship of brotherhood, and they seek to deepen the ties as regional policy is high on the agenda of the Iranian president's foreign policy. The Iranian foreign minister's visit to Ashgabat is aimed at consolidating bilateral ties. Iran and Turkmenistan enjoy good relations as two neighboring countries, and now Tehran and Ashgabat are planning to further boost their relations in various fields, including trade and economy. Farzan Ashurian, Ashgabat.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
More than 200 legislators from European countries which fund Israel militarily recently called for their countries to stop selling weapons to Tel Aviv, citing violations of international law in Israel's relentless bombardment of Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. The website New Arab has covered this story and tells us more. The European Union has been marred by deepening divisions over Israel's genocidal war against Palestinians of Gaza, which shows the world's most powerful bloc is fast decaying. The 5 months of no-holds-barred Israeli assault on the besieged territory has not only exposed the international community, but it has also laid bare deep fault lines in the European Union. The heads of the 27 European countries have limited themselves to issuing passive statements about sending humanitarian aid to Gaza, whilst refusing to make an unambiguous call for a complete ceasefire in Gaza or building pressure on the Israeli regime to end its military assault on Gaza. In its recent statement, the Council of Europe, after condemning the operations of Palestinian resistance movements and emphasizing Tel Aviv's so-called right to defend itself, called for unhindered access to humanitarian aid for the people of Gaza, including through humanitarian corridors. However, according to a report in Politico, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen angered the European Union's foreign policy team in an unusual move. Some 800 European Union staff also wrote a letter protesting that von der Leyen showed unjustified bias towards Tel Aviv. Ursula von der Leyen has been unequivocal and unapologetic about her support for the Israeli regime and the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, which hasn't gone down well with some EU officials. She was one of the first Western leaders to visit the occupied Palestinian territories in October to give her stamp of approval to Netanyahu's war on Gaza. More recently, in von der Leyen's speech at the Hudson Institute in Washington, she again harped about the Zionist regime's right to defend itself, whilst completely ignoring the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. Commenting on the European Commission President's speech, a senior European Union official said, she expressed her personal views and presented an unbalanced view of EU's position on the situation in Gaza. According to some officials, Ursula von der Leyen's relationship with EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell has become strained, and the crisis has heightened as the two of them have slightly different stances on Gaza. Last month, in an interview with the Spanish daily El País, Josep Borrell slammed the EU chief over her visit to the occupied Palestinian territories in October of last year, pointing to a deepening rift within the European bloc. Josep Borrell said, "The trip by von der Leyen, with such an absolutely pro-Israeli stance, without representing anyone but herself in a matter of international politics, has had a high geopolitical cost for Europe." Spanish newspaper El País, in a separate report, said Israel has been irked by the EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell because Borrell has situated himself on the Palestinian side. On the other hand, Michael Oren, a former Israeli envoy to the United States, said the EU foreign policy chief should not be allowed to set foot on the occupied Palestinian territories. These differences and divisions have even spread to other leaders of the alliance, because the history of the European Union has shown that in times of crisis and when the bloc faces serious challenges, it cannot make comprehensive decisions and is not able to speak in one voice. The former Belgian Foreign Minister Mark Iskens, on the eve of the US-led international coalition's military attack on Iraq in 1990, said Europe is an economic giant but a political dwarf and a military worm. A clear demonstration of that has been the war between Russia and Ukraine, in which no initiative has been seen on the part of the Europeans to end the war. Europe has surrendered itself to the United States, Although the bloc has a unanimous voice on Ukraine, it has become a divided house on Gaza Strip. The Israeli genocide case at the International Court of Justice at The Hague, Netherlands, brought by South Africa, also drew attention to these deepening differences in the European Union. Germany had, before the ICJ ruling, said the genocide case lacked any basis and declared that it would intervene in the International Court of Justice's proceedings as a third party. Some other countries have welcomed the ICJ's ruling. The ceasefire resolution introduced by the United Nations Security Council and the UN General Assembly in recent months also laid bare these glaring differences and divisions within the European bloc. For example, on 26 October last year, 8 EU countries voted in favour of a ceasefire in Gaza at the UN General Assembly, while 4 European countries voted against it. On 12 December last year, in another vote, 17 European Union countries backed the truce arrangement, while 2 countries voted against it. Some other European Union member states, including France and Spain, were against it for different reasons. On the situation in the Red Sea, European Union member countries have not been on the same page. On 11th of January this year, only 8 countries, 3 of them EU members, Denmark, the Netherlands and Germany, signed a joint statement with the United States and Britain, justifying the airstrikes against Yemen. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a Belgian Member of Parliament, who is among the more than 200 lawmakers who have signed a letter calling for an arms embargo on Israel, Europe risks any credibility to speak on Russia's special operations in Ukraine if it remains silent on Gaza. Simon Mutkin, a Belgian Member of Parliament, told Al Jazeera television in an interview on Saturday 9th of March, "We are so hypocritical in Europe to speak about international law when we speak about Ukraine and Russia, but if we don't have the same views when we speak about the Palestinians, we will not have any credit in the future to speak about it." More than 200 legislators from European countries which fund Israel militarily recently called for their countries to stop selling weapons to Tel Aviv, citing violations of international law as Israel continues its relentless bombardment of Gaza. In a letter signed by parliamentarians from 13 countries, the European lawmakers announced that they would not be complicit and would take immediate coordinated action in their respective legislatures to stop their governments from arming Israel. The Belgian Member of Parliament said that his own country had to act to stop Israel as well, citing a risk of genocide if countries continue to fund Israel militarily. Simon Mutkin, who raised concerns about an internal split in the European Union that has seen the bloc struggle to address Israel's war on Gaza cohesively, said, "As a signatory country of the Convention Against Genocide, Belgium has a legal and moral obligation to act and prevent the risk of genocide. So I think this letter is a good first step, but we need to go further." The United States is by far the biggest funder of Israel militarily, providing roughly $3 billion worth of aid to Israel every year. Presently, US lawmakers are debating an additional $14 billion package to support Tel Aviv operations in Gaza. Washington sent guided missile carriers and F-35 fighter jets, as well as other advanced military equipment, to the regime in Tel Aviv. We'll be right back.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize a movie with religious or spiritual themes. Well, for that, in fact, we decided to criticize a movie in that line of, you know, religious nature, which is called Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, directed by Armand Mastroianni. It's about a school teacher by the name of John Woodson who loses his job and decides to visit Peru and, you know, to look for a manuscript, and that leads him, in fact, to a kind of awakening. I invited two of my friends and guests or guest speakers to the studio again, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the program.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure being with you, my dear brother.
You're welcome. And Sayyid Abdullah, salam alaykum. Welcome to the studio.
Wa alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Before I ask you questions regarding the criticism of the movie Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, let's take a short break by listening to a part of this movie, and then we'll be back and continue the program Viewpoint on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Fingers together like this.
Okay.
Go ahead. You're going to look at the space between your fingers.
Back to the program. Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Manajat, hosting this program. We are criticizing the movie Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, directed by Armand Mastroianni, with the help of my friends and guest speakers in the studio, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Sayyid Abdullah, what's the overall message of the movie, or that's what the movie is trying to, you know, portray about, especially spirituality and personal transformation?
The main message, in my opinion, was that because they made it very clear from the beginning that as human beings we evolve, there needs to be an evolution. Mm-hmm. And you can see that projected in one of the scenes.
Yes.
So what's next? Like, what is the next thing in the human evolution? And that was pretty much the start of the movie, where the movie was about to take place.
Yes.
So they basically trying to say that human beings, they constantly need something to keep them improving. So we tend to God, and apparently God helped us to a certain extent, mm-hmm. and then we moved beyond God because science came in. So before science, everything that happens, we say, okay, this is an act of divinity. This is act of God. This is act of this. Because we could not explain it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can explain it. We took God out of the equation. God is no longer necessary.
Right.
So we turn to science. Now, what's the problem with science? Science cannot make your life better. Life cannot help you. It might make your life easier, but it cannot help you internally, mentally, cannot help you. So how do we evolve out of that? And this is where the movie comes in. It's like, now you can have this out-of-body experience. You can have this spirituality. You can connect with other people. You can take energy. You can move energy. You can do this secretism, whatever it's called. You can do... you can move to a new age concepts where you are no longer bound by the human material world. You can extract your soul. You can go places. You can... So they basically... go more and mainly on the spiritual aspect. So now spirituality is the new thing.
I see.
But now what they failed to do is, this spirituality, where is it coming from? You can't just become a spiritual one day. Like in the movie, they made it sound very simple. You look at something, you focus at it, and your energy is out there, and then everything changes. That's just nonsensical, right, in any term.
Yes.
So basically what they're trying to do is they're saying, simply, we need to evolve. So we managed to cross a lot of boundaries. We managed to cross religion. We managed to cross science. Now it's up to you to improve yourself from within by directing your energy, by looking at things. And this is a concept, especially back in the day, it was very popular, mind you. And based on that, I think even the movie and the book and The Secret was written based on that as well.
Yes.
Based on the energy that you can change things around you and change your surroundings. So they try to say, we need to evolve.
I see. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie, Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, directed by Armand Mastroianni. And then we'll be back to continue the program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
How it all came to be. My life seemed to be a part of everything right up to now. Everything made sense. Growing up at the lake, working with kids, trying to understand history. I spent my whole life thinking there was something more.
That's the sixth insight. It says we are part of a larger flow of evolution. We are here to do something. And if we are true to that purpose, we'll help move humanity towards the world you saw.
But that's just it. I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
That's because you're not through yet. How to know what to do next is the seventh. You have to discover your guidance.
You're talking about hunches, right? Intuitions? I've seen Will have that.
If you stay alert, you'll notice certain ideas, images coming into your mind. They're there to guide you. Follow them and the coincidences begin to increase. Just step into the flow.
I don't think I've ever experienced that before.
You just need to open the door again. Get some more energy. You remember how I felt on the cliff? How the world looked?
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers. Well, we are trying to criticize the movie Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, directed by Armand Mastroianni. Well, Brother Yasser, you know, one of the major themes or the concept which is very much discussed in this movie is synchronicity, right? Would you please shed some light on this?
I don't think it's focusing on synchronicity too much. I think one of the issues that the movie focuses on is the way humans interact with one another. And one of the scenes that show it was the scene of at the end between one of the characters and the little girl at the Inca ruins that was mentioned. And more to do so with this transfer, which is something good, the way that human beings interact with one another will enable the human being to go from individuality to a concept of this community. If you look at it in this way, then it is something very profound.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what we're all aiming for. A utopia on earth is not something that is based on an individual, but rather it is based on a community of people who share the same values and the same principles. But obviously in this concept, based on this the divine teachings of a particular individual, the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam came to create a community, not just an individual. I mean, we have, for example, in Islamic teachings, many things that point towards this. Salatul Jama'ah, for example.
Right.
Where the energy, again, the word energy is not something I would like to use because I may not agree completely with the word energy because that still remains physical.
Mm-hmm.
This is something else.
Right.
Right. So the particular perfections that each individual has, when it comes together, creates something else.
Mm-hmm.
It forms something better.
Right.
So it's not synchronicity. It is this conforming in a positive manner. It is sharing in a positive manner.
Mm-hmm.
Where I have something that I'm giving to you, and you have something that you are giving to me. And both of us, because of the sharing, are being elevated, are transcending. This is what I think the movie is trying to show.
I see.
But I don't think it also did try to keep God within it to a certain extent.
Yes, as was in fact reflected in the first insight, which is synchronicity is the language of God.
Yeah. So in terms that, you know, that we are become in sync with the world around us and with people around us. But the only way to do that is to share.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Yasser. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, directed by Armand Mastroianni, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
You're making a bad mistake, both of you.
He was undermining your confidence, taking your energy. Now you know what it feels like when someone does it to you.
I felt weak. I couldn't think.
He's just one more controller. But you're probably gonna have to deal with him, so you'd better figure it out.
Wait. Is that in the prophecy too?
There's a world of energy that we are all going to understand. It's the real human condition. Energy is what we all want. But we're stuck battling for it with each other instead of finding it in ourselves.
Back to the program. Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Mahajad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sid Abdullah, my guest speakers in the studio, helping me criticize the movie Celestine Prophecy, directed by Armand Mastroianni, produced in 2006. Well, Sid Abdullah, how does the movie's portrayal of synchronicity compare to the real world experiences of synchronicity? Would you talk about synchronicity and the idea behind it or the philosophy behind it, and then how, did the movie portray that concept?
Well, in the movie, the concept of synchronicity, is a central role of the entire movie, where it portrays a series of, coincidence that leads to a new insight. So they make it in a way where you go through a series of things that will lead you to insight. It's not just random. So you have to go through the nine keys or the nine gates or the nine whatever they want to call them in order to reach this synchronicity and this peace of mind. So this is the central theme of the whole movie was that. Now, comparing that kind of synchronization where you use your own energy to move forward, compared to the real world, obviously there's a huge difference because the real world is really messed up.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about this on a personal level, then yeah, it might make sense. But once you start to interact with other people, it becomes really hard. And you can see that very clear in the movie, that every time they're trying to sync themselves and sync themselves with other things around them, they get interrupted. Whether he's looking at a plant and he gets interrupted, or he's trying to sync with other people and he gets interrupted, or people. And even that, I think at the end, the lady says, hold on to what, you know, and then they just couldn't. So basically, it's hard dealing with the real world and the messiness of the real world. And it's very hard to get synchronized in that kind of sense that the movie is trying to portray. Now, interestingly enough, as Muslims, our whole life is based on
synchronicity. Yeah.
We don't have anything random. From the moment you wake up until the moment you go back to sleep, your life has been designed for you. There's nothing called random. This is you can do, this is you can't do. This is makruh. This is not recommended, this is recommended. This is wajib, this is, you know, must, forbidden, you cannot do. So you're basically walking on a very synchronized path of life, you actually go with the current of life. You're going, even if scientists these days, they say the time of prayers are actually synced with the energy of the world. I don't know, I'm sure if you've heard this. So as certain times, like for example, during Dhuhr, is a time where the energy of the whole earth itself is at its best, and the whole world and everything being is moving. And then when you pray, you move with it as well. So we are synced. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that you have very synchronized with everything around you. To make it more clear, Allah even said, okay, I'm going to give you actions that you have to sync with. For example, salah, like Brother Ibrahim mentioned, hajj, for example. And we have a lot of ibadat where it has to be done or it can be done in groups where you can see how synchronized it is. So as Islam has this as the core of its faith, unlike other religion where you do as you like and then go to a box and ask for forgiveness.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Asir, for your nice answers and contribution to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Celestine Prophecy, directed by Armand Mastrione, produced in 2006. Of course, we didn't finish the criticism of this movie, and hopefully we'll do that in the upcoming episode. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Relax your focus just a bit. What do you see?
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Ayahs, 30 days. The Almighty, upon creation of the world, determined the night of Qadr, or the night of ordainment. The night of Qadr is the time when all affairs of 1 year are determined or ordained. These affairs are ordained through the angels, who are sent down by God to the perfect man of every time. The perfect men, for sure, have been the prophets who succeeded one after another to take over the waiting mission of inviting and guiding people to the way of Allah. However, people were informed of this blessed night only by the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. That's why Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, Allah presented the night of Qadr to my Ummah. Tonight, is the first night of God. Stay with us for a special feature in this regard. This is indeed the 18th episode of our Ramadan special series. The Night of Qadr, also known as the Night of Power or the Night of Ordainment, is a very strange night. One of the surahs of the Holy Quran is called Surah Qadr. It reads, "Indeed, we sent the Quran down on the Night of Qadr. What will show you what is the Night of Qadr? The Night of Qadr is better than 1,000 nights. In it, the angels and the spirit descend, by the leave of their Lord, with every command. It is peaceful until the rising of the dawn." The Almighty God reveals in other ayahs that the Night of Qadr falls on the blessed month of Ramadan. In ayah 185 of Surah Baqara, we read, "The month of Ramadan is the one in which the Quran was sent down as guidance to mankind. So let those of you who witness it fast in it." According to a hadith, the books of Prophets Noah, Abraham, and the Torah of Prophet Moses, and the Evangel of Prophet Jesus were revealed in Ramadan because it is the noblest of months. And the noblest time in this month is the Night of Qadr. The Holy Quran too was revealed to the Holy Prophet's heart on this night. Ramadan is the time of sublimity of human spirit. This sublimity will not be attained except through jihad against carnal desires. Once a number of Muslims returned from jihad, armed combat with enemies, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, told them, "Well done to the group who has passed the minor jihad and the greater jihad remains for them." They asked about the greater jihad, to which the Holy Prophet answered, "It means jihad or struggle against the self or carnal desires." The struggle against carnal desires of the self is much harder than fighting the outward visible enemy. Human beings sometimes consider evil desires as their own desires, while in fact they distance us from the essence of humanity. As long as these desires dominate us, our humanity is like a captive and a slave, who has no chance for growth and sublimity. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was the best servant of Allah, whose heart was the place of reception of the Holy Quran. The greatest value for the Night of Qadr, or the Night of Power, or the Night of Ordainment, is the sending down of the Holy Quran. Since the beginning of creation, this night has been the time of ordainment and measurement of every affair for the following year. These affairs depend on our deeds in the previous year. The point to note is that our fate for the next year is not clear to us. But there is one person in every Night of Qadr who is aware of the fate of whole people and whatever is going to take place in the world. He is Allah's representative on planet Earth. He is the man to whom the angels and the spirit come down and inform him of whatsoever is going to happen to the entire universe in the coming year. Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has narrated that the Holy Prophet was several times asked on the cause of this, crying after reciting of Surah Qadr. The Holy Prophet would answer, I cry for what I have seen with my eyes and understand with my heart, for what Ali's heart will receive after me. Then he took Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib's head in his lap and said, Know that the man to whom the command is sent down after me is this man. According to the evidence, the Holy Prophet meant that he had been informed of what would befall Imam Ali on the night of Qadr in future, which would lead to his martyrdom. The loyal companion of the Holy Prophet, Abu Zar Ghaffari, asked him if the night of Qadr was exclusively related to the time of the prophets, or it would continue, to which the Prophet answered, The night of Qadr remains until the Day of Judgment. The night of Qadr, or the night of power, or the night of ordainment, is repeated every year, so there should be a representative for God in every year. Otherwise, to whom will the angels and the spirit descend? To whom will they give the command, affairs and fate of every creature? The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, said, The night of Qadr exists in every year. On this night, the affairs of the whole year and the fates are sent down. After the passing away of the Holy Prophet, I and my 11 children are the owners of this night. The 11th descendant of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, is Imam Mahdi. May God expedite his reappearance. He is the vicegerent of Allah on earth. He is the owner of the night of Qadr. Thus the angels and the spirit descend to him every year to present to him the affairs of every year. So we raise our hands and pray for his health and reappearance on this blessed night of Qadr.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Israeli forces killed scores of Palestinian civilians in indiscriminate strikes across Gaza, as the total death toll from the regime's genocide exceeds 32,600. A new report says the Biden administration has quietly authorized the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to Israel in recent days.